and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. Steffi.
Oh,
what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
Hump days with Hal Sparks.
Yes! Yes!
Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show and the Hal-only version of Hump Days with Hal. It's hard to imagine that there can be humping without someone else involved. I mean, Tony's here, but I know him well enough to leave him alone. He's been through enough. And Miranda is safely outside. So I think we're cool. It is Hump Days with Hal, and it's sort of Hump Week because I'm here all week filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. And by golly, I thought with all the craziness in the world, I had heard it all. Here we go. The news today, of course, that Tim Pawlenty is officially throwing his hat into 2012, and which is hilarious, and we'll get to that later because let's be abundantly clear about Tim Pawlenty as a presidential candidate. He has no shot. Whether he knows this or not, and this is an act of hubris, or whether he's actually running for vice president, which he has some shot, is a question for the ages. However, let's be unequivocally clear. If Tim's team is listening, no shot. None whatsoever. Right up there with Huckabee and Romney, you guys can win all the straw polls from varying degrees of groups all you want to. None of you have a shot. That also goes for Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, no shot. Not going to happen ever, ever, ever. Donald Trump, no shot. Not going to happen ever. I mean, let's be honest. He's just doing that to boost ratings for his show, and he doesn't actually intend to run. He just wants another platform for us to think he actually knows something, just because I love people who want you to believe they're rich because they have access to other people's money. That's still not technically rich. John McCain, who believes that to be rich in this society, you have to have $5 million. In the bank, I suppose, sitting on it. He never clarified. That was his distinction. He said it was $5 million. That's what makes you rich in this country. I don't think I have to go with people along that line and say that, the wealthy among us, the uber wealthy or whatever, and say that, but I do think that you have to have that money. I do think, yes, access, never finance a film with your own money, never finance a building with your own money. These are atoms that you hear from the rich all the time. Fine. But to call yourself rich, you actually have to have your own money. Donald Trump has everyone else's money, and they have to keep giving him that money or their investment will collapse. So they're continuously feeding this machine, hoping one day it will pay off. But as far as his presidential aspirations, A, I don't think he's serious. B, if he was, no shot. But that all started with Tim Pawlenty. But here's the thing. Okay, then Libya. We are according to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, we are in a very short game, days instead of weeks. And if you look at the conversation that Barack Obama is having in the press, you can often tell when a president is having the exact same discussion in a press conference that he's having in meetings. George Bush used to do this all the time, in that George Bush used to come out and say the things that Karl Rove and Dick Cheney were saying to him that he wasn't supposed to say out loud. Like things they would tell him, like, you have to repeat things over and over to propel the propaganda. You're not supposed to say that, idiot. You're supposed to just think it while you tell the piece of information we gave you to say. Just stick to the script. So when he would go off script, he would say what had bounced off his cranium during meetings between naps and pretzels. And the same thing is happening with Barack Obama, only in the inverse. Barack Obama is saying to the press the same thing he's saying in these meetings, like, we're not going to be here for long. we're not here to be a long-term part of this. We don't want a third front. We don't want to be carrying the weight for you guys, and we're not going to cover all the bases. You guys have to carry the weight, and we're going to leave this off to you, and if you don't want to pick it up, we've got to leave it off to them. But we have a limited role, and we're going to stick to it. And you could tell by his kind of pointedness that he's been sitting in meetings with Sarkozy's cabinet and other members of the UN Security Council's cabinet that are dealing with this kind of thing, and he's having the conversation he had with them. So that's fun to watch. The flipping back and forth that the right wing is going through right now. I love blowing up people who live surrounded by sand, but at the same time, Barack Obama is doing it, so I don't know if I should be for it or against. I'm for not doing it, not sooner. That's my argument, and I'm sticking to it. I'm with John McCain that we should have done it before asking anybody. We should have just shot first and asked questions later. Where's the cowboy diplomacy? I miss that, even though it did us no good and tons of harm. But so that's crazy. I thought I'd seen it all, though. I mean, in all this back and forth, Gaddafi is clearly the Charlie Sheen of the Middle East, in so far as his addressing people. I would never align Charlie with Gaddafi as a human being, but certainly messaging wise, the perception is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I don't know how you translate that into Farsi, but we have managed to go further. We have managed to step one huge step down the rabbit hole. Iran, this is the headline. Iran claims they built a flying saucer. Kind of amazing. If you look at this now, technically, an official state-run Iranian news agency claims that the country has created the world's first flying saucer. Well, if you listen to Jim Ward when he comes on my show on Saturdays on WCPT Radio in Chicago, Chicago's progressive talk. Neither he nor I believe that the world's first part. Anyways, in the official announcement on the FARS website, the news agency claimed that the craft was unveiled to Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei in a special ceremony last week. The unmanned craft is apparently intended largely for aerial imaging. The saucer, named Zohal, which translates into the combination of Zoltan and Hal, because it's obvious that Ahmadinejad, huge dude, wears my car fan. I'm kidding. Zohal actually translates to Saturn in Persian. It's reportedly part of a new generation of vertical flyers, according to the Daily Mail. From the original release, Zohal, designed and developed jointly by Farnes Aerospace Company and Iranian Aviation and Space Industries Association, can be used for various missions, especially for aerial imaging. The flying machine is equipped with an autopilot system, a GPS, and two separate imaging systems with full HD 10-megapixel picture quality, and is able to take and send images simultaneously. And it's available to use Android apps. I'm kidding. I added that. Zohal uses a small portable navigation and monitoring center for transmission of data and images and can fly in both outdoor and indoor spaces. However, the ship has its skeptics. The picture above that accompanied the release, which I'll show on the Ustream feed if you want to take a gander at that, halsparks.com. You can enjoy the chat there as well. I'm going to show you the picture that came with it. And it's straight out of the Don't Ask, Don't... It's somewhere between The Day the Earth Stood Still and the top that Leonardo DiCaprio uses in Inception. I think this is their imaging for this. I'll hold it up to camera. Whoops, hold on. It's hilarious to me that, if you get a nice picture of that, it looks like somebody just... Like, how can we make generic flying saucer? So a lot of fun coming out of the Middle East today. I guess, I don't know if Ahmadinejad and those guys down there just decided that Gaddafi was out crazying them and, they feel left out of it. I don't know. We'll take a break. We're going to come back and take your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm hearing reports that, Elizabeth Taylor may have passed. I will confirm that after, the break, if that is true or not. But if so, our condolences to her immediate family and the extended family and all of her friends who knew her for a very long time. I had the pleasure of meeting her. She was a lovely lady. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Join the party. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in, mildly sniffly, all week long, but specifically today, because it is hump days after all, and I, you don't have to play it now, just top of the hour, fear not, Tony. Tony Sorrentino, who's filling in engineering and producing and doing all the yeoman's work of trying to jimmy the cabinets here so that we can use the electronics that have been locked away. Chris just bundled up for the winter and left the place, you know, like we're a bunch of renters. We just don't have access.
Look, you guys really can't go in that room. I know it said in the thing on Craigslist you have access to the whole apartment, but I honestly don't want you to go in there because that's where my model trains are. So if that's okay, I'm just going to leave it like that.
Let's take some of your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. Let's go to Jim in Chicago, Illinois, because I think we agree on this point. Hey, Jim.
Yeah. Too bad. You know, they can claim to have the first flying saucer, but we know that they named a band after that, actually, the first one. So it's called the Foo Fighters.
They right.
Right off of the wings of the B-52s coming back from Berlin, probably developed by a man named Victor Schauberger, a genius guy who was a naturalist, even though he was like a mechanical and mathematical genius, refused to go to the Polytechnic Institute. Instead, got all his information from observing nature.
Right.
Probably 30 years too late. Sorry, Ram.
Yeah. Well, and also we've been using, you know, spy saucers of certain sorts for a long time. They're not anti-gravity based, but some of them are propeller based, some of them are jet based, but we've had them for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
That picture does not.
The picture, if you look it up, is brilliant. If you can even look on the FARS website, and, you know, I was like, they can't actually be putting this picture out with it. But then you follow the source, the actual link to the original thing. Like, it looks like they just picked something off of Netflix, like the poster off of a crap sci-fi film. Yeah.
So aside, but like one of these days we'll come up with an energy form that doesn't involve digging stuff out of the ground and burning it.
That's heresy,
that's
Jim.
Not too far away.
That's I totally agree. But it's madness, and that's crazy. Why would you do that when, according to Glenn Beck, it's anti-American to think we're ever going to run out of oil? That's a real thought he's putting out there. So,
it's this terrible opposable thumb I have. It's terrible.
I know. The things you can build and
off and go back into the caves again.
I know. With your bicameral mind and your opposable thumbs, you'll be able to think up stuff and build it, and that's just not right.
It isn't, really.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it. Let's go to Joe in Spokane. Hey, Joe.
Good morning, young man. I'm really confused. I need your help.
Okay.
You guys have this guy, Billy, from Texas calling. He says he's a conservative.
Right.
I cannot understand what a conservative is. Take Rush Limbaugh.
Right.
He's on his fourth marriage. He did not conserve his first three wedding vows.
Right.
He made the statement on his show that white people who use drugs illegally should be sent up the river, but when he got caught, he did not. So he's not into conserving the rule of law. Newt Gingrich,
yep,
on his third marriage, didn't conserve his first two sets of sacred wedding vows, got caught stealing money, and had to resign from being the Speaker of the House. So what do conservatives conserve?
You know, that word has collapsed a long time ago. I think that's why they attack the word liberal so hard, is because it's a sound word for policy, whereas conservative is just a smokescreen. The word is a smokescreen because everything they do, everything they're about, every plan they come up with, there's nothing conservative about it unless you consider conservative a retroactive 20s robber baron policy. Like, I want to conserve time. I want to drive time back to when the rich could just run roughshod over anybody because they had gotten to a resource first.
Right, and we're, of course, kind of heading towards that oligarchy type thing again. It just amazes me that people would follow a Newt Gingrich and a Rush Limbaugh and look up to them when everything they do in their life is just... They don't conserve anything. That's all I can say. And maybe old Billy's listening, and he can call and tell me what he conserves. I wonder, does Billy drive a car that gets 30 or 40 miles a gallon, or does he drive something that gets 12?
Right, exactly, because he's not conserving natural resources. He's not conserving the land. He's not conserving the country itself. Jobs here, for example, they're cool with them being shipped overseas to Mexico, to South America, India. They seem fine with that because, hey, it's business and you can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs, right?
Hey, man. Hey, have a great day, buddy.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. That it is kind of an amazing thing that word has collapsed. Well, we all know that there have been no conservatives in the conservative party for at least 15 years. And since Newt Gingrich ran it during under the Clinton administration, I think that was the real turning point. Some people will say Reagan, was sort of the bringer of this. But by all standards, he would be kicked out of the Republican Party by now. They went so far. They need a new name. If liberals have to take on progressive to kind of define who they are. Because someone else wrecked that word and tried to take it from us. What indeed are conservatives? Let's ask Bob in Minneapolis. Hey, Bob.
Hey, I've been pushing this for a while. What we call conservatives are actually radical authoritarians. They're corporatists, which is basically the 21st century version of feudalism.
Right.
So these are guys who love kings and leaders and centralized power and hierarchy. So what people call conservatives are radical authoritarians who are trying to turn a democracy into a feudal state. What we call liberals are conservative populists. We're trying to conserve the rule of law, habeas corpus, Fourth Amendment, and we're about the power of people. We're about democracy.
Right.
And
yeah, I agree.
That's what makes everything in this nation so difficult to deal with, is that we don't talk about things by their actual names.
Yes.
We talk about the war in Afghanistan or Iraq. Those are occupations.
Right.
The reason they're going to go on forever is because you have to win a war, and you can't win an occupation. Who's our enemy state in Iraq?
I agree.
Nobody.
That's arguably why you can't operate on a declaration of war in Libya, because right now the opinion of the UN and the United States is that the Gaddafi regime, once they started firing on and strafing their own people, became an illegitimate government. Therefore, you can't declare war on Libya because we're not at war with the people of Libya in a general sense. And that's part of the complication of modern warfare, but by no means. That's why we went into Iraq. They couldn't fight back. The idea was, you know, it's like if there was a bully in a bar that you want to punch in the head, but you're too afraid and you can't do it, like Iran in that case, because we feared their air force and we feared that they may have weapons of mass destruction. That was our genuine concern, perhaps, even though I don't think that's the case. On the other hand, Iraq didn't have these things, and we knew it, so we could go pants them and spend a lot of ordnance in the sand.
Yep, and until we start calling things by their actual names, it's going to be really hard for us as a nation to move forward.
I agree. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate the call. And, and that's a man coming from Minnesota, from Minneapolis. So he's had to deal with Teepaw for a while. Talk about not being able to call things by their real name. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We are streaming live at HalSparks.com/Ustream, or just on the front page of HalSparks.com. You can follow me on the Twitter if you don't want to sit in the chat in there. You can Twitter things to me at HalSparks during the course of this, because it is the modern era. We don't have to just take calls. I can get your information and your input via the electronic waves that come across the intertubes. we will be back right after this, and... I'm going to need your guys' help on something, because I'm really confused at what the whole point of the Republican Party is right now. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Clearly, Steph's not in studio today, or she would never approve us playing Substance D. Amazing band from the 90s, by the way. Named after the drug in A Scanner Darkly, if you'll recall, Substance D. And a fascinating the albums that they have are chained together with, you know, almost concept albums. Really, really cool stuff. They're available on the iTunes, Substance D. Gotta love them. And 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. And I'm having a real hard time, believe me, and I'm not that different from a lot of Republicans on this, figuring out what the real point of the GOP is these days. What are they? On the one hand, that's why this crop of 2012 candidates not going anywhere. I mean, not the least of which, this is very telling. Huffington Post runs this article, GOP primary election 2012, a perfect candidate is hard to find. It's sort of assumption that they're going to find perfection in any of the people that they're going to run. It's hard to find, but it's possible within the GOP. This is the meme of Huffington Post? Okay. Anyways, the opening paragraph is very telling. Mitt Romney is the godfather of what Republican critics call Obamacare. Newt Gingrich is an adulterer on his third marriage. Tim Pawlenty is too green, environmentally, that is. These are the three... that they lead off with. And what they go to on Tim Pawlenty as his unelectable point is that he's a green candidate. What? How about bigot? He was one of the first ones to come out and say we should reinstate Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Regardless of the fact, by the way, that 70% of the military are completely cool with it, think it will have no negative effect, are fine with it. The vast majority are for it. Tim Pawlenty says we should just... extrajudicially, just kind of go in there, even though the law's been repealed, it was done exactly right. Somehow, Huffington Post calls him a green candidate. That's what excludes him from being able to do this. Okay, it says John Huntsman works for President Barack Obama, and Haley Barbour comes off as insensitive about race relations in the South. He doesn't come off as insensitive about race relations in the South. He is insensitive about race relations in the South. What do you mean come off as? How much testicular cradling is Huffington Post going to do of these candidates over the next year? All right. So these are their front runners. And by the way, Ron Paul is winning most of, one CPAC straw poll. His followers who he really does have cult-like status amongst the C4L group, and there's an argument to be made that he's a legitimate libertarian candidate. P.S., he'll never get elected, not because of his libertarian views, or is because of his anti-war status. That's the ironic part of that. He's to the left of Barack Obama when it comes to war. Now, again, action is not indicative of character, motivation is. Morals are not defined by activity, because if I don't kill someone because there's a cop nearby, it doesn't mean I'm a moral person. It's just I'm better at committing murder, perhaps, and I'm waiting until the coast is clear. So just because you're anti-war, that doesn't automatically exclude you from being, a dangerous element, in the political process. Why you're anti-war is, another, if you want to build up sort of a point of control for the hordes of masses you think are coming in the United States, you don't think we want to spend ordnance over there when we could be spending it on our own people over here at some point. Not that that's where I think Ron Paul is going. I'm just saying that's character is defined by motivation, not action. So I don't necessarily write off the fact that he's against the Afghanistan and the Iraq war police state. It's hard to even find a definition that actually works. But I don't know quite what they really want. Do they know? I mean, is if there's a right-winger listening who really knows what they want to accomplish other than just freedom, because that's not the case, because they only want freedom for those who are like them. They want, you know, people just need to leave the people alone to do whatever they want, except, you know, with personal use drug laws and gay people and women's rights and choice, whatever. Okay, George seems in Tampa, Florida, seems to think he knows their agenda. What's the agenda, George? Help me out.
Hey, thank you, Hal. Listen, fun listening to you and all that stuff. Why I'm not confused is because everything they do is from a religious standpoint. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but the religious right
sure.
has disappeared, and it's morphed into this party without a doubt. And either they're trying to force their religious agenda, and the ones that oppose, they are using punitive measures and trying to actually go out of their way to punish the people who are opposed to them, which is typical of any religious zealot group. So I'm never confused. I'm always looking at it in the terms of those.
I would certainly be with you when it goes to women's rights of any sort, including women's right to vote, not even just choice as a base, because I think choice is the first shot across the bow in a lot of ways to these folks. They really want to just drive women back into this. It's the, you know, they are the religious Taliban. They're the Christian Taliban of our country. They really want.
Agreed. That's exactly my point.
Instead of a burqa, the house will be good enough. Just make sure the shutters, you know, if you draw the curtains, that's the same thing as wearing a burqa. Just, I don't want to see you.
That's what I think. I think they've gotten smarter over time, knowing that they're not going to win, claiming religious this,
right.
religious that. Now they've just morphed it and they've
that's why they bristle. That's why they bristle it at political correctness, why they think, you know, you have to be, you know, even Glenn Beck is doing this whole, you know, it's people who feel tied down by political correctness. Where have we gone?
It's like, dude, it was very clear.
It's not political correctness to call, to not use the N-word against someone or the F-word against a gay man or,
exactly.
you know, that's not political correctness. It's politeness at its very root. It's civil discourse. But it's not political correctness. The only reason you're using that word, if you believe that, is because you would rather be using that word and you don't understand why the rest of the world moved on without you. You are a dinosaur who is running out of oxygen. And here's why I think the religious thing doesn't hold 100% for me. Is because the repeal of health care is one of their big moves. You know,
I think that comes under punitive, though.
I don't know because they repeal Head Start. Children, newborn children, they're trying to cut services, postnatal care for underprivileged women. You would think if there was anything more Jesus-y that we do as a government.
Oh, well, it doesn't mean that they believe in Jesus's tenets.
Well, that's where the confusion comes in. That's what I'm saying, George.
That's right. If Jesus landed on Earth right now, they'd reject him. There's no doubt.
Well, they'd nail him back up. I mean, that's essentially, beat it. We've got things handled here, man.
Exactly.
They don't have any interest. George, I love you, but I think you just confused me more. Thanks a lot for the call.
Sorry about that.
Thanks.
Have a great week.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Max in L.A. seems to think he knows why Pawlenty would be a green candidate.
I think, Hal, how are you this morning? I think
Good.
They mean he's green as in inexperienced. Not that he's for green initiatives or that he's...
Oh, no. Huffington
an environmental
Post.
Candidate, but he's viewed as a lightweight in terms of experience.
Well, yeah, but he's a two-term governor, and which is more than Sarah Palin is. She's a half-term governor, and they still consider her legitimate enough to try and, you know... Obviously, I joke because she's got less of a primary electability rating amongst Republicans than if we actually ran Dennis Kucinich. I have a feeling.
Well, they say that now, but I think when it comes down to push coming to shove, if they really think they can beat Obama, their rap on him is always that he's getting on the job training or that he doesn't
right.
know what he's doing or he's the guy that can't be trusted with the power. But here you're going to roll out the governor of not a major state.
Yeah.
A mid-level state with no real urban problems. No, it's not like he's the governor of California.
Right. Well, and keep in mind, the infrastructure problems they had while he was governor were national news.
Exactly, and he's a disaster. As far as you mentioned, he was a bigot. That makes him the ideal candidate for them.
Well, I agree. For them, yes. For the rest of the country, no. Because if
you look at
and that's why I said no chance. They can primary him, and I think in a lot of ways, the reason he has some, you know, he's running for this is he's running for vice president. He's one of these guys who is setting this up because he doesn't expect to win at all, but he does, and he could qualify as a running mate for a more extreme, higher profile personality candidate.
I agree.
And because he comes across as milquetoast, even though he's just as bigoted as the other candidate, so he could probably soften the message.
I saw him. He was on Jon Stewart a while back, and they were treating him as if he was somehow reasonable and someone to be listened to or somebody thoughtful. And we need to see the media really dig into what these guys are about, because they're shortchanging the voters in terms of what they're presenting us with. And I know that's by design to a certain degree, but things are way too serious right now. And to get these clowns put out there as reasonable as crazy. Love what you're doing, Al.
Thanks.
A great day.
Appreciate it. No chance. I'm just telling you. He can put the exploration all he wants out there. Newt Gingrich, not running. No chance. Mike Huckabee, I'm sorry. The name Barack Obama, as foreign as it sounded to everybody else, is a cool, hardcore-sounding name, Barack Obama. It has some energy to it. Mike Huckabee sounds like somebody who gets hit by a panel of wood on a fence on an old country show after telling a joke. There's not going to be a President Huckabee. Even if he was qualified, he'd be an ice skate uphill, and he's not. We'll be back after this. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show, 1-800-STEP-12. The numbers are lighting up because people are trying to help me figure out, does the GOP even exist anymore? What is going on? Let me know. Please try to help me out here. We'll be back after this.
For a good time, call now, 1-800-STEP-12.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH12 is our number. StephanieMiller.com to contact all of them and send your music complaints to them while we're on vacation, or complain that our chat room is too crowded because we get so many people in there. By the way, please feel free to join us in the chat. There you can, on your computer. On the computer machine, you can go to halsparks.com. Right there on the front page, you can watch the show live streaming, and you can actually see what Tony Sorrentino looks like and all the people who walk in and out of the studio while we're doing the show, who I'm never quite sure what they do, but they come in and throw a switch and walk out. It's one of these days I'll know enough about radio to know what the heck is going on. But then at some point, I'll try and sneak you guys a peek of what Miranda looks like, because she's out there working the phones and doing a great job. We have tons of calls because you guys want to explain to me how who the GOP is. Okay, Myrna in Madison, Wisconsin, who we love just because she's in Madison and is in Wisconsin, where, I mean, the center point of, of the Main Street movement. How are you, Myrna?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call. Hale, I don't understand why you're confused. It's really clear to me.
Okay.
Well, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it fascism, you can call it Nazism, but the issue is totalitarianism. The GOP wants to take over, wants to hand over control to all the corporations. That is the definition of fascism.
Right.
The corporations take over all government functions. And when the Nazis took over in Germany, the first things they did was they abolished trade unions and they closed the abortion clinics. So that's the direction we're headed in. And the reason that the media isn't speaking up about it is, guess who owns the media?
Right. Yeah,
okay.
I totally agree. I just think and I don't disagree with you on the sort of the controlling party aspect of the GOP. And thanks for the call. Because we have a ton of them. I just think that it's a mishmash. There's a difference of opinion in liberal quarters right now on a lot of different things. Whether healthcare was worth, if you should have scuttled it just to get the public option, or if it was good to get the other things, in there and build towards a future where we eventually get to that. There's a legitimate difference of opinion there. There's a difference of opinion about the legitimacy of the Libyan, front. And whether or not we should be involved there, whether the United States should be, sending Tomahawk missiles to another Arab country in the middle of what we've been through, relationship-wise over the, I mean, there's a legitimate discussion to be had, yes or no, against that. There's a mental scatter going on the GOP side between the religious zealots, the corporatists, the freedom constitutionalists who want the constitutional elements that apply to them, and then they want to dismiss all the other ones. It's this, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. There's this bizarre, let's go to Dan in Marin County. Hey, Dan.
Oh, yeah, hi. Good morning, Hal.
Morning.
To me, conservatives, I would regard as mutant Republicans, at least present-day conservatives. And, Hal, one final thing.
Yeah.
This big hoo-ha that comes up every so often about us becoming socialists and socialized.
Right.
Has anybody noticed that in the background we do business with communist China?
Yeah.
Now, why does that go unnoticed? If we could do robust business with them, something like $2 billion a day that we're indebted to, we're worried about becoming socialists.
Yeah, it's absurd. And, you know, it kind of boils down to the conservative Cuba reflex. That
yeah.
They're still fighting this war that doesn't even exist anymore.
Exactly.
With a country that is so under... There's no way they could have any impact on our country at all in a negative sense, and they have no interest in doing it, but we are acting like Cuba is Iran parked off the coast of Florida, and there's no logic to it. They're still fighting. I mean, this is 1965 in their head.
Yes.
It's stunning. I think you're totally right, and thanks for the call. Let's go, let's see, seven is Mike in Springfield. Hi, Mike. Are you there? Did we lose him? There we go. Hey, Mike.
No, I'm here.
There you are.
I'm a Republican.
Okay.
And you asked for an explanation of why we're still here.
No, not why you're still here, but what you're about.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear, what we're about. I mean, we're about freedom and choice, and it seems like.
Well, then why are you pushing anti-choice bills for women across the? Why would somebody who's for freedom and choice put a bill in place that makes a woman who's been raped or the victim of incest prove that to the IRS so she doesn't go to jail?
Well, part of that choice, Pal, is why are my taxpayer dollars going to fund that abortion?
We're not saying that they did. No taxpayer dollars can go to do that. The question is, why would you put an extra level of bureaucracy into the IRS on a law that already exists to make a woman who has been raped prove that she was raped to an IRS agent?
I don't want to get too off track. I can see that you.
We
want
are
to
on track. This is look. You said you were for freedom and choice.
Yeah, you're right. And
where's
why,
the
why
okay? What about
idea?
Gay marriage then? Gay people want to get married. You think they shouldn't?
Well, first of all, I personally think that that's fine. I have no problem with it.
Okay, well
I'm
then.
More of a constitution. Do you want me to explain it, or do you want to just keep telling me what I think?
So you're but you said you're here as a representative of Republicans. You said that you're a Republican. You're going to explain it to me. And
yeah,
so I'm saying, why are Republicans passing bills to deny gay people rights if you're for freedom and choice?
Well, why are your ideas so good that they have to be mandatory? Why?
What are you talking about? You want to bind someone else's hands, and I don't want their hands to be bound, and I'm the person with the bad idea? I don't get that. That's amazing. We got to take a break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Yes, that's what it is. The GOP is for freedom and choice for themselves and nobody else. So far, that's where we are. We'll be back after this. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Yes!
Yeah. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. It's Hump Days with Hal, and I'm flying solo today. I'm actually filling in for Steph the whole week, and it's nice because it's giving me the opportunity to have a long, substantive conversation with you. P.S., the Temple Endy point I was making earlier, let's go to Ted on line two. He's from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Ted.
How's it going, Hal?
It goes well.
All right. So in regards to the green factor of T-Paw, he's always been a proponent of ethanol energy,
right.
And he also is very supportive of state parks. So I think that's where the green portion is. I think where the HuffPost missed out on why he's going to have a problem either getting the nomination for the GOP or the presidency is his main selling point is he never raised taxes in his two terms as Minnesota governor. However, we currently have a $5 billion deficit, state deficit, and a lot of the taxes that were raised were at a local level, so a city level. So, like, when increases needed for roads and schools and stuff, it went straight to our property taxes and not our state tax.
Which allowed him to kind of ride on that while sort of have his cake and eat it too, to some degree. But only
exactly.
In certain districts that could afford it. So you basically have parts of your state start to collapse under the weight of not being able to balance it out. And when you're talking about, you know, maintaining an infrastructure for a state, you can't just, those people live over there and they don't have much money, so that whole part can go to hell, even though trucks and stuff have to go through there, and even though, you know, if a fire engine has to go from this side of town to the other side of town, they have to go through that area. If they can't afford to keep their lights running correctly, and the fire truck crashes on the way to the rich part of town, that's not my problem. It's an oversimplification, but that's essentially where it is. I think, and maybe, I don't know how you'll feel about this, I think one of the biggest albatross is around his neck right now is his don't ask, don't tell position. So here's the quote from him. He was talking to Center for American Progress, Igor Volsky over there, and he said, we have to pay great deference, I think, to those combat units, their sentiments and their leaders. That's one of the reasons why I said we shouldn't have repealed don't ask, don't tell, and I would support reinstatement. And Igor said, and rescinding the funds for implementation of repeal. And Pawlenty said that would be a reasonable step as well. Okay, so on the one hand, he thinks that the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was a mistake and it should be redone, even though and he's saying because we need to listen to the soldiers, even though the vast majority of the soldiers are for it. Secondly, his idea for getting rid of it is to eliminate the funds for implementation. I don't know how much you need funds to not prosecute something. One would think that the funds that would be used would be for having trials and kicking people out. Wouldn't you think? I mean, maybe they got to print some pamphlets for, you know, some of the people, like how to learn to get along with gay people, for some of the recruits who are, you know, might need some help in that area. But that's not the same as the cost of rooting through someone's life to find out if they're gay, kicking them out if you find enough evidence to, you know, to reasonable suspicion. That's a big government version of this thing. Again, this is an area where I'm a small government conservative. I believe in limited government, except when we need to pay for $1 million investigation into somebody to find out if they may be queer so that we can kick them out of the military, even though they're saving lives, they're working hard, they're a much-needed translator or a much-needed soldier or a much-needed officer. That's aside. I need to spend $1 million rooting through their personal life because that I'm worried that the gay might rub off on me. That I think is a bigger problem that nobody's addressing, and I'm surprised HuffPo blew it off.
I think it's kind of weird that Teapot is now taking on the stance. I mean, it might be more he has to sing this tune in order to get the GOP nomination initially.
That I don't doubt.
Because Minnesota has a strong, gay and lesbian community that both straight and gay people take a lot of pride in. And when he was governor, that was never an issue at all.
Right.
Speaking of a straight person, gay people in the state might say differently, but that was never an issue until the nomination. And if you saw his promotional video over the week, he keeps on saying how Reagan-esque he is,
right.
And that never was a platform that he ever stood on during his 8 years as governor. So
it's
just a song and dance he has to do right now for the GOP.
Right. Well, I appreciate the call, Ted. It's it's still hard for me to sort of figure what the actual field is all about. Let's go to Brian in Chicago. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm spectacular.
Good, good. Couple of things.
Okay.
I wanted to first talk about the basic governing philosophy behind how Republicans work.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty easy to understand if you just kind of view it in the prism of they want to do whatever possible to allow people to get as rich as possible. Doesn't matter how they get their first $20 million, but the GOP wants to be there to make sure they can make million, 20 through 150.
Right.
So if it doesn't help that, such as, abortion doesn't really make people richer, gay rights doesn't make a millionaire become a billionaire, they just don't care about it. It's not that they're opposed to it, they just don't care. And it's like,
I wouldn't say that that's a fair assessment, because if they didn't care about it, they would be laissez-faire about it. They would just leave it alone.
Their voters care about it.
Right.
The leaders don't care. I honestly don't think the leadership of the GOP cares one bit about abortion or gay rights, because when they were in office, they didn't do anything about either one of them.
Well, I would say that was the case. Now there are horribly draconian anti-choice laws being put in, especially at the governor level in a lot
of
states. And now they are going after gay rights, the reaffirmation of DOMA that they're going to have to fight for. I think you're right about Boehner and Cantor. I think those guys are strict corporatists and they could care less. They don't even think anybody who has more than $5 million net worth is an actual American. I totally agree with you there. But there's a crop, the Mike Pences of the world and the Jim Inhofs of the world and Jim DeMint. I mean, these guys are creepy. And they use religion as this major, as a sledgehammer, in this game of, civil rights whack-a-mole. And anybody they don't like, they try to find some way to come down hard on them. The fact that they would go, okay, we can't do Roe versus Wade, we're never going to get that done, but on a state level, we're going to make a woman have to tell an IRS agent that she was raped, just to scare them out of the concept of, if she was raped, just having the rape kit done. I mean, they are literally, here's the thing. On the one hand, let's make the morning after pill considered an abortion pill in the state legislature. Then on the other hand, we have to make sure that pill was not paid for. If she doesn't have insurance, that she has to pay for it out of pocket. And then we're going to make sure the insurance agent has to say that the IRS agent has to see for sure that she paid for it out of pocket. She needs a receipt for the abortion pill. That they're basically trying to squeeze a woman into, within 72 hours of being raped, not feeling the freedom to make sure she doesn't become pregnant. This isn't even about abortion. This is, again, they clearly don't care about children because they're cutting Head Start programs, child nutrition. If they were going, look, we're going to make America supportive for kids. A woman shouldn't have to have an abortion because she should know whether it was rape or incest, that child will be supported. If she was raped and she needs to have that child adopted, she knows that our adoption system and our foster parent system is the most highly regulated and perfected in the world. That childhood nutrition is immensely important. That preschool and Head Start programs are there to make sure that even if she doesn't have enough money to raise this kid, she won't make an economic choice about her abortion. If they really cared about abortion, that's how they would go about it. But they're doing the exact opposite. They're literally creating, it's almost as if they want to create an army of children born into poverty, make them into soldiers, they can send them someplace else to get killed. It's cannon fodder. Like I said, if you really cared about these babies, then why do you stop helping them once they're born?
Well, you know, we are in luck, though. And I'll tell you one real quick thing. I went to school in Iowa. I went to the University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. I was there for two different caucuses. I was there for 04 and for the 08 caucus. None of these people have a shot at winning that caucus because if they think they're going to be able to go there for a month and kind of glad hand and give these kind of sweeping generalizations of answers, people in Iowa don't have a whole lot. I mean, we have Hawkeye wrestling, Hawkeye football,
right,
and we have the caucus. And it's not taking place during football season or wrestling season, so they take it really seriously.
Right.
You have to do
they pay attention.
Interviews. And,
it's a point of pride.
Right, really in-depth sit-down interviews with newspapers and TV, and you can't give these bland answers because they're going to call you on it. That's what Huckabee won last time. It wasn't because he was great. It was because he was at least honest and sat down and said, well, this is what I think. None of these people have a chance. I think if the person that's going to run against Obama, we don't know who they are yet because none of these people could survive that caucus.
Right. I totally agree. And I also think that Huckabee has ruined his chances between then and now. His most recent statements just point to it's almost like he's going for the Sarah Palin dollar insofar as idiocy. I got to take a break. Thanks for such a great call. I appreciate it. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. By the way, this hour brought to you by the Mini Cooper with 37 miles per gallon. Learn more at miniusa.com/info because that's how we say information in the modern age.
This is Too Weird, Man.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show, where we are breaking all the rules, according to Ozzy Osbourne. That's off of No Rest for the Wicked, which is Zakk Wylde's first album with Ozzy. And I was always an Ozzy fan, but when that album came out, stunned. An amazing album, just the guitar work on there, the solos, everything, just so well-formed and terrific. I'm a big Jakey Lee fan, don't get me wrong. Unsung hero of the Ozzy arc, but man, when Zakk came in, just blew the doors off the place. So we are talking about the Republicans, and because Tim Pawlenty has officially made his first step into, I think he's officially the first one to declare that he's going to try and run for president in 2012. And I'm trying to figure out what the heck these guys run on because I think none of the guys they have that are currently looking to enter the race have any shot whatsoever. Let's go to Tom in Chicago. Hey, Tom.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
I got to take you to task a little bit today, Hal. That Republican caller you had, there's a guy that's a potential convert to our side, and rather than letting him speak, you were condescending, you were over the top, making fun of him. This is why we keep losing the argument.
Well, for the record,
we have to stop doing that.
For the record, I opened up very patiently, I think, and I said, tell me what you want, what you're for. And he said, freedom and choice. And I said, you would do this kind of a bill then? And he tried to move on to the next point without dealing with it.
Exactly, and that's what they're always going to do. You let them move on, and you go back and say, oh, and by the way, you never did answer the question.
Right, but that means I have to have him on for a half an hour, and a lot of these guys are trolls reading from a sheet. So the truth is, you know, the... It's a hard one. I get it. But
I understand.
I'm willing to have those conversations in person, and I do often. And I usually...
All right, here's the kicker. All right? This is part of why we lost the fight back in the 70s. All right? Eventually, we gave the world Jimmy Carter. Well, the Republicans are doing the same thing with Mike Huckabee, and if you think it's not the same, it is. Trust me, I lived through it. I remember those days.
Well,
I love Jimmy Carter, probably our greatest ex-president.
Yep.
However, the man was not suited for the White House.
I disagree. I think he was undermined from the very beginning, and there was a specific plan in place to make him a one-term president, to eliminate that. And I think he went in with a level of naivete and belief in the American people that wasn't appropriate to the office, perhaps.
That's why he was unsuited for the office.
Well, I would rather have somebody go in and really say who they are.
The problem is, I understand, you're right, I get it, I understand, but the problem is then you turn around 4 years later and the Republicans give us Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan was being so charismatic as he was, took away 20% of the center. He just literally took 20% of the center and made it his own.
Oh, no question.
And we will be fighting for the next 30 years to get that 20% back.
I agree, but I think we've learned our lesson as far as charismatic entries into the fight, and I don't think Tim Pawlenty or Mike Huckabee, if they're trying to do an end run and create their own Carter, I don't know how that would work, but I appreciate the call, Tom. I will try to do better at some level of conversion, but the truth is, if somebody's going to come on and I'm genuinely asking them a reason why they believe something, and then they just kind of dove off to another point, then they're just on to bulldoze a thought, and then he starts accusing me of, well, why don't you let me tell you what I think? And he said, he's a Republican. He was speaking on behalf of Republicans. This is the way he came on, and I just didn't buy it. Okay, so let's go to Mary in San Francisco. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
You're in San Francisco, so you're immediately suspect. So anybody, any Republican who's listening is not going to hear a word you're saying. I'm just going to let you know.
Okay, but I think you guys are very close to the idea of what the Republicans are for, but it's not you're not exactly on point. The whole point is that the corporate agenda and the cheerleaders in the GOP, as part of the wealth transfer to the top 1%, and by the way, everybody read Mother Jones, The Vampire Economy, terrific issue,
right,
has it all explained
and
very
Naomi
clearly.
Klein's The Shock Doctrine.
Includes the necessity of doing legislation against gays, women, the poor, children, whatever, because they have to keep the masses fighting amongst themselves so that we don't notice how much they're taking out of the economy. And right now, I have to tell you, it is absolutely the best economy in the world for the top 1%.
No question.
They cannot believe how much money they're making. I mean, they're setting fire to bonfires of $100 bills to heat their homes.
Right.
While the rest of us
are. $3 trillion.
Yeah.
Currently.
No. They're having a wonderful time. Trust me. Caviar sales through the roof.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
And
gold-plated yachts.
Yeah.
It's just fabulous right now.
Which, Well,
don't fool yourselves.
Don't fool yourselves, rich people. Don't gold-plate your yacht. It'll sink like a stone.
This is what happened just before the French Revolution. Is that the aristocracy finally said, you know, we don't really feel like we have to pay any kind of taxes.
Right.
You all do that, but the merchant class, the poor class, you all pay taxes, but we don't have to because we're the aristocracy. And right after that, Madame Lafarge was knitting in the front row as head after head fell.
Yeah.
So, hello.
Well, again, though, I wish I could feel that, trust that there would be kind of an uprising in that regard. And I'm very heartened, like a lot of people are, by what's going on in Wisconsin. Absolutely. But how many let them eat cake moments are we going to get from the GOP candidates before people literally, even on their own side, go, wait a second?
Well, the only reason that the poor and the middle class will not rise up is because we have the illusion that we can still make it, that there's still something that we have worth protecting. That's what happened in France, is they took the final thing away, and then there was nothing that they had worth protecting, and so then they were totally free to revolt because they had nothing to lose.
And that's happening
where
on a
we
state
are now is we
on
have
state
the
level.
Illusion of being wealthy because we have TV and we can watch any show and we have cheap fast food, and so we still think that somehow or other we're still part of this elite class. But eventually, even that will end.
That's going to dry
and
up.
Yep. Look out.
Well said, Mary. Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
For the call. Appreciate it. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. And I hope she is, I think she's probably dipped in some sort of mud vacuum tube situation in some spa someplace. I hope so. I'm certain of it, as a matter of fact. We'll be back right after this. What's the GOP all about? I think we're clarifying. We'll be back after this. Simmons. France really had the chance to. There was plenty of romance. Don't get off on the lyrics of it. Just enjoy the chorus. What I'd rather do is rock it in the USA. By the way, my this hour's me being actually awake, brought to you by Steez Energy Drinks, because without them. I mean, I've had 3 20-hour days. I'm beginning to think these things are half jet fuel. I don't know what they do to cover the taste of the jet fuel, but it's pretty impressive. In the next hour, we'll be giving you an update on Japan, on Libya. But right now, with the GOP crowd starting to make their foray into the fight for the 2012 primary season and the election cycle, we're trying to figure out what the heck these guys stand for, because it seems like a dichotomy to me. Let's go to Rob. Maybe he can explain it. Rob in Gilbert, Arizona. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
Great.
Good. This is the first time ever calling into a radio station, so this is exciting for me.
Yes. Well, just talking to the right side of the phone. I always get that part mixed up. Go ahead.
I'll try that. No, what I would like to do is just calmly just kind of hit on the key points that you've been talking about all morning.
Okay.
And kind of give you the common sense and compromise ideas that the true Republicans are really looking for.
Okay.
On the abortion issue, you know what? It always goes off to the extreme about what about talking about the rape? What about talking about the incest? Okay, so the compromise part is let's go ahead and
the health of the mother.
Right, and let's go ahead and give you that. But let's go ahead and talk about what about all the abortions of convenience? Okay, now the compromise would be we'll give you the rape, the health of the mother, the incest, all of those extremes, and then understand that the abortions of convenience is way out of line. Okay.
Great. And like I said, I think I made that point in the last hour, which was then why defund Head Start? Why defund all the poverty programs for underprivileged children? Why try to defund SCHIP? If that's a Republican stance, like, look, okay, we want all the abortions of convenience to stop. If you could call being poor, you know, and not being able to afford to have a child, and you're worried about its nutrition, its your ability to raise it, and your fear of an unregulated foster system, and that the child might be molested or abused in some way, so you just decide you're not going to go through with it in the first trimester before it is actually anything but a group of cells. You're not allowed to do that, but okay. We're not going to back you up. That's the part that's is confusing to me.
Okay, let me speak.
Okay.
Okay, there's your extreme again. Okay, number one is, let's see what the true problem is why aren't there condoms being used, and why isn't safe sex being practiced or taught to these young children to at least use a condom, or to make sure that these young ladies understand that a condom needs to be used? Why can't we push that education?
Well, I'm for sex education.
Well,
I think most liberals and progressives are actually for sex education in schools.
Bringing up the condom use. Again,
yeah,
let's
we
not
are.
Go to the extreme of,
hold on,
not
no,
go
no,
to
no,
the
no,
extreme.
No. Condom use in schools. All the push for condoms being distributed in schools and education about condom usage in schools has always come from liberals and progressives.
Why are there so many pregnant young ladies and
because in red states all over the country, Republicans take sex education out of schools.
I'm trying to talk to you as a citizen to a citizen, and let's get away from the Republican Democrats. The issue is, why are all these young ladies getting pregnant unless they're not using condoms? And they ought to understand that the man does not dictate whether a condom is used. It's the woman. So if we push that,
wow,
we would eliminate a lot,
okay,
of your problem.
All right, gotcha. So women are 100% responsible for that. Let's say the condom breaks or is used improperly.
There's your extreme again. There's your extreme again. If the condom breaks, it's just like, what about rape and incest? Quit with the extremes. Let's just get with the condom use. It would eliminate the majority of...
Okay, great. So you're for the teaching of sex education in schools so that young people, especially women, who apparently this is it's 100% their responsibility, know how to use one properly, the first time they have sex, from that point on. So you're for public school sex education.
Absolutely, and they need to be understanding. And I'll tell you what, being a guy, and you're a guy, I'm a guy, listen, guys do not like condoms.
Wow. All right, that's just a ridiculous conversation. What? This is the... Okay. 1-800-STEPH-1-2. By the way, he said he was a Republican and wanted to give the common sense argument for why Republicans would... And that's where we dovetailed into that the... This is the common sense Republican argument. that guys hate condoms. That's why Tim Pawlenty wants repeal, don't ask, don't tell. That's why the other guy said freedom and choice are indicative of the Republican movement, and then immediately went on to say that gay people getting married in their own lives is somehow forcing their views on them? What? Okay. Let's go to Phil in Bowling Green, Ohio. Phil, you there?
Hi. Yeah, I sure am. Hey, well...
I'm still recovering from what the hell, but okay.
Okay, before I get to the main point here, the one guy said that you were condescending to that guy and that you could maybe win over somebody like that. You know, and I kind of thought about, Oberman. I mean, the guy was always right on. He had his facts. But sometimes the way he presented him, I was afraid that he might be like turning off the middle of the road.
Sure,
type people.
Understood.
And so I'm thinking that can happen, and the
oh my clutch the pearls moment, where any kind of exasperated language seems to drive away about an 8% group in the country, regardless of side. That if you raise your voice at all or if you seem angry, they just respond to the emotion, not to the content. Why you're angry is not important. It's the behavior that scares them. I hear you. Yeah.
And, maybe that's why it made Reagan so appealing. He was never angry and that kind of thing. And so, I love to watch Oberman, but I could see how the middle 30% that we have to get, win over to get to our side, or else we lose elections.
Yeah.
But,
I many people know that when I filled in, I've actually when sensible Republicans even libertarians call in, I've had solid conversations with them, and some of them have gone, I have to say I've shifted my opinion and I get what you're trying to say, and I don't think I'm coming across as attacking. I'm not Mike Malloying these guys, and I love Mike, but I'm
not
calling them SOBs and saying Jesus Christ, you're a madman, click. I'm genuinely trying to engage in finding out what they're... This is an interesting thing too, because we had a caller earlier who dumped off. He left, but what it said in the call screener was that don't attack, you're just attacking the GOP, and I'm like, you can't hear every criticism, of what you do and how you do it as an attack. It's not an attack. We might actually try to find some a bridge point through criticism. But if you take every criticism as an essential, like, venomous attack because you have no ability to parse the thought, then I can't take you seriously.
Yep.
So I appreciate the call a lot.
About the Republicans, though. I know some local Republicans here, and I've known them all my life. And they're, you know, very good people. They're honest people. They really do work with their church. They're good Christians. And this is at the local level.
Right.
Now, I don't know what happens to these people once they get to Washington, like Boehner, for instance. He's from Ohio also. I mean,
Well, again, you don't get to that point by being a good Christian.
Exactly.
GOP.
Group.
You don't.
Yeah, and they're absolutely scary. Boehner, and he comes on crying. One time he had to work when he was in college, and he was crying
for his dad.
That.
For his dad. Okay, you can't say you had this kind of like blue collar. Jim Carrey, his father was a janitor, and Jim Carrey after school, after going to high school because he had a bunch of brothers and sisters and they lived in Canada, had to clean toilets and mop floors at his high school. That's not the same thing as working at your dad's bar and then growing up an orange alcoholic. I'm sorry.
Right. An orange alcoholic.
Exactly. Thanks, Phil. Appreciate the call. I have a ton of calls and I want to be able to get to some of them. Let's go, George in L.A. Hey, George.
Hi, Hal. You know, I'd like to get a chance to defend Jimmy Carter. I'm sick of hearing people, denigrate him. You know, everybody should take a look at a book called Liberty Under Siege. It was about politics, American politics, from 76 to about 88. So it covered Carter and Reagan, and written by Walter Karp. A great book. It will make your blood boil. Carter would have been a great president had his own party supported him, but they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't like him. He was an outsider, and they didn't like that, and he wouldn't play the games, I guess, but...
Well, and it later came out, and this is directly tied to the Iran-Contra affair and trading arms for weapons illegally, that the Reagan administration and their ties to George Bush leading up to that had manipulated the circumstance in Iran to keep Jimmy Carter from being able to solve it during his presidency because they knew running into the election that it would hamstring him. And the same thing with their buddies in OPEC at the time. There was this belief that they could boiling point him on three different positions. This was the first real foray into the manipulate policy while you're outside of office so the other guy is screwed. And it's what leads me to believe in many ways that George Bush, the junior, decided with his handlers that they would torpedo the economy leading into the election and start a U-shaped recession, which turned into an L-shape, which is always ugly for everybody, because they believed somehow that that would help McCain get elected or whoever the Republican was. This is how they operate.
Yeah, exactly. It's disgusting.
I'm a huge Carter fan. Do we still, by the way, and Tony, do we still have that Carter clip from the other day that I had you grab? Because I might play that after the break. So we got to take a break right now. But in honor of George in L.A. defending Jimmy Carter, and good on you for doing that, by the way, George.
You're doing a great job, Hal.
Thanks, brother. I want to play that clip when we come back from the break. This is what an awful President Jimmy Carter was. We'll play this when we come back. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. What does the GOP stand for? I still can't figure it out.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEP-12.
The Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, and we are trying to figure out what the heck the Republicans are really all about, because they're going to have to decide. I mean, in all honesty, we're coming to they're going to have to start staking out their positions. And it's not looking promising because Tim Pawlenty, who was otherwise, you know, Captain Milktoast, whose greatest accomplishment was creating, I think, the biggest budget deficit in Minnesota's history. I could be wrong about that, but irregardless, it's huge, and was governor, you know, when the infrastructure was collapsing, and handled it with a shrug. They're going to have to start defining who they are. Meanwhile, people were calling in saying, you know, Jimmy Carter was unsuited for the presidency. It depends on what. Maybe the American people weren't ready for a president that gave them the truth. I mean, I got to say that there's an option that's, you know, possibility. And we'll get to more of your calls, 1-800-STEP-12. But I want to play a little clip of Jimmy Carter right now.
Good evening. Tonight I want to have an unpleasant talk with you about a problem that's unprecedented in our history. With the exception of preventing war, this is the greatest challenge that our country will face during our lifetime. The energy crisis has not yet overwhelmed us, but it will if we do not act quickly. It's a problem that we will not be able to solve in the next few years, and it's likely to get progressively worse through the rest of this century. We must not be selfish or timid if we hope to have a decent world for our children and our grandchildren. We simply must balance our demand for energy with our rapidly shrinking resources. By acting now, we can control our future instead of letting the future control us. 2 days from now, I will present to the Congress my energy proposals. Its members will be my partners, and they have already given me a great deal of valuable advice. Many of these proposals will be unpopular. Some will cause you to put up with inconveniences and to make sacrifices. The most important thing about these proposals is that the alternative may be a national catastrophe.
Jimmy Carter had the guts at the first signs of peak oil to really look down the road and go, we have to deal with this or we're heading into a situation where we're going to be fighting other countries for a limited resource, and we need to start getting off it now. Put solar panels on the White House roof as an emblem of where we wanted to go and where we needed to go as a country. He pushed for us to move off fossil fuels way back then. And was it the fact that Jimmy Carter was unqualified to be president, or was it the American people were just not ready to live up to the standard he was setting? And is there a difference? Let's go to Mike in Queens. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Listen, I'm thank you for bringing up Jimmy Carter. I think he was a good president.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good man. And people need to read the book, at least The Guts to Try. It's Colonel Beckwith who built Delta Force.
Right.
And he says after the mission failed, at least he had the guts to try.
Right.
Ronald Reagan was a traitor. Okay? I don't care if I piss off every Ronald Reagan lover out there. He was a coward and a traitor. Right? Instead of going after the guys who, and I was in a cavalry when this happened, when instead of going after the guys who killed those 240 Marines
mm-hmm.
in Lebanon, what did he do? He tucked his tail between his legs. I'm out of here.
Well,
right.
Big,
so he goes
right.
and beats up Grenada.
Right. Well, that's,
I mean, are you kidding me?
I know. Well, that's the Republican game plan, which is if anybody attacks you, find a softer target and beat up on them instead. It makes
thank you very much.
It's the most bizarre bar fight mentality in the world. Some guy comes up, you know, punches your girlfriend, and you go, oh yeah. And you go, run over and kick the bar back in the nuts while he's picking up a box of bottles. It's so inexplicable. And in the case of Ronald Reagan, you know, when the Iran-Contra affair was made public, they're literally trading guns illegally.
Yeah. He gave the weapons to the same people who killed our Marines. He sold the weapons to Iran, who trained Hezbollah, who killed those Marines.
And they hid the money through drugs.
That's
and those
it.
Drugs found their way onto the streets in America and started
and folks,
the
crap. This is no...
it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy.
Fact.
Right. It's absolutely... It's well documented. And and I'm sure you remember when Oliver North showed up for his, you know, his congressional hearing in his uniform, even though he'd already been relieved of duty. He's still wearing his ribbons because they were doing branding. He was, you know, and Reagan's defense, I don't recall, I don't remember, I didn't do that. And I, you know, some of us were, because if you find out that he had entered primary dementia within a year of getting into office as a result of the blood loss from being shot, you know, that you almost could buy it. But the truth is, he was involved, whether he recalls it or not, to some degree, he signed off on all of it. And that's...
Yeah, well, he added those famous words, my heart tells me I didn't, but the facts show me I did.
Right, yeah. Thanks a lot, Mike. Really, really a great call. This is... they're going to have to wrestle with all of this. As much as people might not be feeling that, you know, Obama's giving everything that he promised in his campaign, or that he's, you know, Gitmo's still open, even though he's tried three times to shut it and he's been blocked by the Republicans every single time and doesn't have the actual presidential ability to just write it off. He does need Congress and the Senate, you know, specifically to help do that. It's who he's up against. These guys are a wreck. And they don't, half the time, what they believe is crazy, and the other half of the time, they don't believe what they're saying. That's the amazing part. We're up against the bottom of the hour. At top of the hour, we'll be taking your calls. I'm hoping to have Richard Hunter join us in the next hour, if I can, if we can work out our technical issues getting him on the line. But 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. And I'm actually, one of the callers is saying I have GOP derangement syndrome. we'll be back after this. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
The Hump Day.
Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Shake it.
Yes!
Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation, and what a crazy time we are having this morning. Let's give you a little bit of an update before we jump back into our call stream, because it is, the phone lines are jammed because of the conversation we've been having trying to figure out what the heck the Republicans are about. The situation in Japan, workers have been pulled again from the site because of an expression of steam from the reactor. It's hard to tell at this point what's cautionary and what's an emergency. It's really kind of difficult. The IAEA is releasing regular stuff, and if you want to check out all this stuff without the filtration of news or opinion, you can go to IAEA.org, International Atomic Energy Agency, and you can look at they give you a regular update every time, and we'll go to that right now. The Fukushima nuclear accident update that's just available right on their front page. This is, by the way, where most of your news folks are going before they, you know, before they make this decision, you know, or they make their reports, rather. Restoring power to Fukushima Daiichi. Without electrical power, cooling systems at Fukushima Daiichi 6 reactors cannot operate. Many of the problems facing the nuclear power plant stem from the loss of electrical power at the site following the massive earthquake and tsunami on March 11th. The earthquake cut off external power to the plant, and the tsunami disabled backup diesel generators. Japanese officials have been working to restore power to the facility, and their efforts are organized into three phases. Units 1 and 2, the cooling systems at these units are severely hampered. There is suspected damage in the nuclear fuel rods. In both units, workers successfully connected off-site electrical supplies to a transformer at Unit 2 on the 19th, and later to at least one electrical distribution panel inside the plant. Technicians are conducting diagnostic tests to determine the integrity of the reactor's electrical systems. Units 3 and 4, the cooling systems at Unit 3 are severely hampered. There's suspected damage to the reactor's fuel, and the condition of its spent fuel is uncertain. 5 and 6, both units have been shut down for routine maintenance prior to the earthquake, reducing their cooling needs somewhat, but not entirely. On March 17th, operators were able to start one of the Unit 6 diesel generators on the 19th. Workers successfully connected the second diesel generator in Unit 6. So some progress there. Units 5 and 6 have been holding those, though those are mainly where the spent fuel rods are put, which is nuclear waste. I caught myself using the word spent fuel rods, which sounds almost nice. It's nuclear waste. It's toxic nuclear waste that has to sit and be cooled for years before it's cool enough to bury. Secondly, can we all again agree real quickly that we should stop calling these nuclear reactors and start calling them nuclear-powered steam turbines, because that's what they are. We are not pulling direct magic energy from a nuclear reaction that's happening. They are simply heating up boiling water. The steam from the boiling water turns turbines, voila, electricity. Anything could be turning those turbines. This is a cheap way of doing it, unless you count the cost in human lives and in damage to the environment, which is inevitable. That's the most recent update. Workers in Wisconsin are still trying to are still gathering in protest in mass in groups larger than the Tea Party could muster, and yet getting half of the coverage. Well, that's not fair. They have been getting a little bit of coverage from Fox, where they've been portrayed as violent and apparently with palm trees in the background. That's Fox's big meme. That in and of itself. And then in Libya, the United States number of attacks, missiles that we have launched is diminishing over the days, and there seems to be a concerted effort to hand off the actual, not just the operation, but the actual mechanical elements of it, missiles fired, planes in the air, all that to the coalition forces, specifically France and Great Britain. So we're going to talk more about that as we go along. But let's take some more of your calls, because we've been talking about what the GOP stands for, because they're going to have to run on something. Let's go to Brian in Eureka. Hey, Brian.
Good morning, Hal.
Morning.
It's an honor to talk to you. I find your comments and observations well grounded in facts, not fiction. I appreciate that.
Do what I can.
I'm occasionally in your chat room as RN case manager, and my job actually saves taxpayer dollars, but that's a whole other story. One of Steph's guests remarks about the Obama derangement syndrome.
Sure.
And I say it's kind of a Republican derangement syndrome, because as far as the GOP agenda, I think it's pretty simple. It's really their agenda is for the uber business class. This is not your mom and pop businesses.
Right.
And really at the expense of average people, because it's the uber business class, you know, that funds them. And also as far as your all the scripted callers that are calling you, you know, the Fox faithful.
Yes.
Enough of these pinheads, and I say that in all deference to pinheads the world over. You know, you really struck a nerve to have mobilized the Fox defense system.
Well, you know, I don't want to be too brash in going, I do not fear them. But in all honesty, their arguments torpedo themselves, and then they
absolutely
get angry at any dissection. It's quite bizarre.
It is, and I think that you know, when you really look at it, I think and I hate to say this because you're part of infotainment, but I think of it in a good way, not the
that's what stand up is to me.
Mainstream media.
Right.
It is. And I agree with that. One last thing I'd like to say is,
sure.
I really appreciate your optimism. I really do, and I hang on to that too. But you know, two things. Unless we, get the campaign finance reform, and I mean all the special interest money, military industrial complex, everything,
yep.
out of politics, and take back our voting system instead of giving it to corporations that won't tell you how they come up with the numbers they come up with, I hate to say this, but all of our talk, I don't care if it's foreign policy, domestic policy, everything, I almost hate to say it's just a lot of verbal you know what.
I understand. Thanks, Brian, for not saying the actual word on the air and for being part of the
no
chat.
Problem.
I appreciate it. You know, I have to agree with you on that point that the money in politics is a huge portion of the problem. But it also to some degree abdicates our responsibility to have some level of sensibility. You know, when they talk about the you know, it's all about the ads. At some point, we have to figure out a way, and perhaps, you know, technology is doing it for us, to not be quite as sheepish that, vote for the last thing you saw. I mean, if we're going to have candidates that we operate on the same, level that, we do Starbucks or Coca-Cola, in that the reason they just want their name out there, that's why the ads for beer don't make any sense whatsoever, don't have to, because you know what the product is, they just want you to remember the name so that when you're mildly hammered, that's what you ask for because it's been drummed into your head so much. One would hope that the political process is a little more adept than that, and I have to say there is a slight move in our country to pay more attention over the last decade. And I think part of it is because Republicans are waking up to the lie that was George Bush. And liberals and progressives have not yet forgotten it. Although sometimes I have my doubts about that. I think we had forgotten that. We got to take a break. More of your calls after this. 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. Going to break on Black Label Society. That's for I Am Pete in our chat room, who hates my taste in music but likes my politics. We'll be back after this. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. To the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. This is Set the Demons Free and Watch Them Fly. War Machine by Kiss. Right on. And pretty appropriate for the bicameral, bifrenal situation that we find ourselves in as a country. Looking at the Libya situation, there's been a lot of, ham-handed back and forth about whether or not the president has the constitutional authority to back a UNO fly zone by firing missiles into an area or protect the people of Libya. If he has, if he overstepped his bounds, Kucinich floating, is this an impeachable offense? By the way, when he knows full well it is not. Dennis Kucinich knows very well that the president has the authority to do this. He can disagree with that authority, but it's been around for a long time. It's why we haven't declared war since World War II. This is not the Korean War. This is not Vietnam. This is not the 16-year or 18-year no-fly zone over Iraq that we maintained through, seriously. People didn't bat an eye. There's an article on Politico, which, again, not a huge fan, and watching them play pickup with him is kind of funny. President Barack Obama is testing a novel strategy in backing the international intervention in Libya. One informed by bitter experience in the Middle East. He's referencing, of course, Iraq, Afghanistan. And by traditional confidence that American military power can be judiciously wielded as a force for good. Even as Obama wants to protect Libyan rebels and forces loyal to Libyans, from forces loyal to Libyan strongman Muammar Gaddafi, the president also wants to avoid putting the United States into another situation, the third in a decade in which America would be responsible for rebuilding a Muslim nation it has attacked and decapitated. So even though Obama reiterated his call Monday that Gaddafi needs to go, he said America is not authorized to target him under the conditions of the international agreement under which it's operating. This seeming disconnect has made for some awkward moments for the White House, which has at times struggled to explain the stutter-step nature of the campaign, and it's fed into a growing GOP line of attack that Obama was slow to act and reluctant to lead. But to Obama and his generals, it all makes sense within the strict confines of the United Nations Security Council resolution that authorized them to act in the first place. Restrictions they clearly hope prevent this from becoming the third U.S. shooting war in the Middle East of any lengthy duration. The president has been talking in terms of days over all the press that he's done. I think you can tell from what he's saying that he legitimately means it. There's no desire here for another quagmire someplace else. I don't think he wanted to deal with the things he dealt with in regards to Afghanistan and Iraq when he came in, much less starting again. So this is kind of the back and forth that's happening. The GOP on the one hand loves the idea of bombing Libya. You've got McCain and Lieberman arguing that we should go in and we should have gone in faster and we should be leading the bombing strafe. So we should have boots on the ground and we should, you know, all but take the resources of this country. They're not, you know, they're mincing those points. But, you know, in all honesty, they're gung-ho for it. And their argument with Obama is he's too tepid, that he doesn't want to stay the long game, that this is an opportunity. You have an opportunity to roll into Libya and tell him what, you know, give him what for. So this is, in many ways, this is a difficult situation that there's reasonable disagreement with when you're really trying to talk about it. And I think there are, some to be had, certainly. The older Republicans that have been around for a while are comfortable with what is going on and not making a lot of play. The standard bearers are all out there waving the flag around, and Fox is twisting itself in knots trying to figure out what's wrong with what he's doing. But again, there's a difference between legitimate disagreement and your party, and which I think the liberals and progressives are dealing with right now in regard to this action in Libya and the enforcement of the UN no-fly zone and the actual Tomahawk missiles that are being fired and many people, you know, Cindy Sheehan wrote a very, very hardly worded letter calling any Democrat who supported this action a fraud, very strong feelings in any way. And yet I think there's legitimate grounds for this, and I think a lot of people feel that way. It's not very cut and dry. Meanwhile, on the Republican end, they are struggling to come up with anything that doesn't sound like they are just Obama bashing. But they're going against stuff they actually want just to make the case that he is bad. Is that an issue worth dealing with? Let's go to Jonathan and Hadley. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Hal. I want to say you're doing a great job and you're stimulating a very good conversation. But I think the discussion should be along the lines of what you're just talking about now, and that's, we all know what the GOP is. We know what they stand for, but where are we today? Where is the Democratic Party today? And I personally feel, and whether or not you agree with me or not, there's certainly a perception that President Obama has backed away, if nothing else, from a lot of his campaign, I'll say promises or statements at least. Going back to the health care, where for the first 2 years he was AWOL in that debate. He was nowhere to be seen, and he's a master campaigner, and he wasn't there for it. And it goes on from there to even in Wisconsin, he said during the campaign he would be there on the line. He wasn't there. He was tepid. And I think that's going to come back to haunt him, and that's what gives the GOP even, maybe a better than 50-50 chance of taking the White House back.
Well, I will disagree with you about the 50-50 chance, because he's actually got better numbers than Reagan had at this point in his presidency, and that's kind of amazing considering the bashing that he has received. And so far as a lot of the things that he said during the campaign he's backed away from or has not delivered on, I would say that it's less than 25% of what he campaigned on has he yet to do. We're right up against a break, but I appreciate the point, and I will make a case that that we will talk about what we're about. But since today this is the first Republican that's going for office, we got to deal with what the enemy is. Know your enemy. And not that I guess I don't view him as an enemy. Know your opponent. Sure, opponent's a better word. We'll be back. Favorite part right here. That's just sick. Okay, welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. What an amazing discussion we've been having today. I agree that we should be on point about what we are defined by, but I think we've made a better case, even for those that don't believe the president has done enough or has done it too slowly or has abdicated some of his promises. I think with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the creation of the stimulus package and pushing through health care reform, regardless of, whether or not they had everybody on board, really making it a priority and setting the groundwork for a public option one day, making an implemental change that, in a lot of people's lives will affect them forever, and being supportive of things like Pell Grants and taking the banks out of the college loan program so that kids aren't saddled with more debt than they can earn in the job they're getting. Having the government actually look into for-profit colleges and go, are you making people pay more for the education than they could actually make in the job? And are you lying about the number of job opportunities that are available to them? That's something Democrats are for. Protecting the innocent, going into a situation like Libya, instead of unilaterally just kind of going, we're going to go in there and just going to bomb places, we're going to send in troops, and we're going to cut off the head of the snake and brash language like that and use the word crusade and walk around in a codpiece. The president goes to the UN through this as swift a process as he can to protect the Libyans, the uprising there, and keep Gaddafi from just strafing them from the air, and then really honestly handing it off over the next. It'll be interesting to see, because yes, there was an escalation in Afghanistan, and you could tell by the back and forth, if you looked at what the negotiation that went on leading up to it, that Barack Obama was not particularly happy about having to do it in the first place, and was very suspect, I think, of the military leaders who were just fine to stay in there and spend ordnance in the sand. But I think we might actually, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. As a progressive, this is Obama's first personal military intervention. And it'll be curious to see if it plays out the way he wants it to. Let's go to Sharon in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Hal.
Thanks for holding
on
so long. I'm great.
I have, what do conservatives really want in my face every day here. And there's a website by George Lakoff, who wrote the book Thinking Points, a Progressive Handbook for Communicating Our American Values and Vision. And he has this amazing blog from February about what conservatives really want. And he lays it out really profoundly and concisely, saying that Conservatives believe in individual responsibility, not social responsibility. They don't think the government should help its citizens, and they don't think citizens should help each other. So they want to cut out the parts of the government that help people because it violates individual responsibility. And he goes on to say that the way to think about the conservatives is to think about a family with a strict father, where the father is the decider, and he has to
right.
to instill ideas of discipline and even do it physically. And also, if they don't have internal discipline, they won't become moral beings. And the only way you can become prosperous is to be disciplined and have a moral fiber that comes from that discipline. So if you're poor, you don't have internal discipline, and then you can't be moral, so you deserve being poor.
Right.
And he says also that the market is seen the same way. Like, the market is the decider, and the government can help the market, but the government shouldn't do the things that the market is designed to make, like it shouldn't provide services, and it shouldn't help people because it will undermine people's own self-discipline.
Meanwhile, by the way, they eliminate most moral choice by creating laws based on morality. They think,
that's right.
For example, homosexuality is a moral choice, that you make a choice to be gay or not be gay, but they want to legislate that behavior. And once you create a law, technically you eliminate the moral, because no one's acting based on character, they're based on whether they'll be punished or not.
That's right. So it doesn't matter if it's a choice or not.
Right.
I mean, God says, don't do this. And whether or not you're born that way, it doesn't matter. Just don't do this.
Yeah, ultimately, if you believe in the Ten Commandments, you have no need of legal law.
That's right.
You will be, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. So if there's no point in, in mitigatory legal practices. There's no charge for manslaughter,
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. There is a family structure and specifically a religious structure that often gets carried forward.
Yes.
And I think sometimes Democrats, and the reason why, Obama's finding it, difficult to kind of create, the groundswell during the process of presidency as opposed to during campaign, is because I don't think we're looking for a leader in quite the same way that the Republicans do. I think there's a messianic quality.
Well, and that they meet in secret meetings all over the country. Like the Koch brothers meet with other people to strategize, and we don't do that, and we don't really understand how to address their underlying frame. They talk about deficits, but it's just a ruse. It's just a way to break the unions.
Well, when you're dropping, Ed Schultz made this point, and I think a lot of callers made this point on the show yesterday and the day before, that once you're dropping $500,000 bombs in the desert to blow up a building no one is in, stop complaining to me that a teacher who makes on average $21,000 a year is a drag on society or your state budget. It's absurd.
That's right. It's just not the issue.
It's absurd.
And so they can talk about deficits, and then the Democrats get pulled into that argument when it's irrelevant.
Right, exactly. Well, that's why I've actually been trying to engage in these conversations, why I wanted Republicans to call in and explain to me what they're actually for. And in all honesty, it falls away the minute once they move past the bumper sticker, their behavior doesn't back up the phrase.
That's right.
We believe in equality. That's the why, that's the other thing, too. And I thank you for the call, Sharon, and you hung on there. It's so wonderful to see. But I think we have the simple message. One of the things that, Democrats have a problem with messaging, and Republicans have a great Frank Luntz. They can know these talking points, and they just hit these points. We have the simple message. When
yeah.
we say we're for equality, we mean it. And you can arguably go, I'm for equality. And you can just kind of cross your arms and stop there. Because if they say, I'm for freedom, well, that's just another word for, equality. The ability of everybody having equal right to be free.
Yes.
But then they have to explain to me why they don't think that gay people should have the right to get married or live together or buy property together or adopt or all these things. Why women shouldn't have the ability to choose what happens to their body or ultimately vote or any of these other things. This anti-single mother thing that they really have.
That's just not what they mean by freedom.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Their message is complicated. Ours is simple.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Pete in Los Angeles, who similar kind of take. Hey, Pete.
Yeah, it kind of is, and I think that previous caller said it excellently. By the way, I'm not just Pete, I am Pete.
Oh, nice. I am Pete, who hates my music choices in the chat room. It's okay, man.
No, I know. I knew that. I was being sort of facetious.
I have a huge, and you need to know this, I have a huge chip on my shoulder about right-wing radio. Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, they play all this music. They play Metallica and Megadeth and all these things, and these guys don't listen to any of it. This is, I don't know what they listen to. Rush Limbaugh had Elton John perform at his wedding. But I know they don't listen to the stuff I listen to. They use it because they think it motivates their redneck followers, their redneck listeners. You know, because we like metal, and that's what's going to drive us to go, yeah, this is manly, when it's not what they listen to at all. I actually love this stuff. They do it because it's a great branding element. So when I'm on Steph's show, I do it. So go ahead. Sorry.
No. I think that one of the reasons they probably use it also is because there's so much anger, at least that's my perception of it, behind it, and it's obviously angry music, you know, and I can appreciate your appreciating it, even though I don't, but
right.
I think they use it because it fosters that anger and hatred and mean-spiritedness.
I think it's intense. I don't necessarily, I wouldn't go angry immediately, and I would go forceful, but I also would not say aggressive. I think there's, and not all songs blend together. You know, not all of them have the same meaning. You know, War Machine, the Kiss song I played earlier, is not an ironic song, but sort of a diatribe about what you are as an American if you just kind of exist. You know, I wrote a song called American Psycho, which is the next single for my band, and it's about being a psychopath in America is nothing compared to the average citizen. The average citizen in America, because of our wars and the things we've done, has more blood on their hands than any single serial killer that's out there, because we sit by passively and we allow these things to happen. And that's more of a sociopathic reflex than it takes to pick up a knife and actually do the thing yourself. And so I think, you know, this kind of music, while it's dealing intensely with that idea, has value for that.
Okay.
You don't have to like it, though. What's your favorite music, just so I know?
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, very eclectic. Yeah. I really like jazz a lot. I do like 50s music and doo-wop, and I like blues a lot, and I play harmonica myself, as
nice.
A matter of
as
fact.
Does Jim Ward, by the way. He's a massive...
I know.
Tony will play something just for I Am Pete in our chat room after this. But go ahead and make your point so we can...
My point
I'm up against
was,
a break.
Sure. To explain republicanism on an individual basis, I was gonna put forth that, you know, basically there are authoritarian personalities. I know this is not an original, unique theory. None is, I'm sure.
Right.
But I think that really goes a long way to explain it. They fall in lockstep. They look for dictatorial leaders, and they fall in lockstep. And that's why they can vote as a bloc way better than Democrats
sure.
do in Congress.
It's almost strictly based on how you were raised. And if you're raised in an authoritarian household, you will look for authoritarian support. Most people have the same picture of God as they have of their own father.
Yeah.
Or the exact opposite, because you seek something you did not have. So if you totally had a laissez-faire parent, you might seek an authoritarian God because you need some sort of security. Or if you had an authoritarian God, you know, parent, you might seek a laissez-faire God to counterbalance that. Most people, though, if they're raised by an authoritarian father, seek an authoritarian God. If they have an open, kind of happy father, and this is in the patriarchal systems, by the way, it's a totally different system if you were raised by your mom and you kind of create a more open spiritual system. Most people who, if their dad was kind of laissez-faire, they view God as kind of forgiving and you know, give them a little bit of a charm reflex.
Yeah, it's like what Randy Rhoads calls the daddy syndrome.
I think
that's all part of the same explanation theory, and I certainly go along with that. Now, I was intimidated by my father, but my parents were politically liberal, though, and I also, you know, I maintained my own values, whether I was afraid of my father or not. You know, I'm So I'm very liberal and even radical at times, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I think that probably that dichotomy of your dad being kind of a strong father figure and at the same time having liberal views gave you the ability to be eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it gives that overlay. Now I'm not going to write off the fact you may have been born with your personality, because I actually do believe there's something to that. But that's my own metaphysical beliefs. But
right.
Thanks, Pete, for not only calling in, but also being in the chat room. I appreciate it. We'll play some... Sorry, I dropped him before we could do that. We got to go to break. This is for IMP. And we'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We're in the waning moments. We're getting close to our happy ending. It's going to happen. We still got some calls on the line. 1-800-STEP-12.
This is a disgusting display.
Boy, you can say that again.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
That's right. Truer words were never said by the second gayest rocker in the world, Freddie Mercury. That's number one, I think. Judas Priest with, you know, Turbo Lover and those kind of things. But still, like, he was, like, hardcore or whatever. But, you know, the variety that was in Freddie Mercury's stuff from, like, you know... regardless, awesome. This is really cool. We're getting near the end of the show, and we will have our happy ending, no doubt. But we've got some callers on the line, and they've been holding on for a while, and I want to be able to get to as many of them as I can. So let's go. Cindy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Cindy. Are you there?
Hi, Al. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Okay. With all the, you know, back and forth, Republicans, Democrats, who's doing more harm or good, I wanted to introduce a new slogan for the Democrats for 2012.
Okay.
Okay. And it is simply pro-worker.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, this is kind of based on some of the other slogans in the past. I'm pro-life, I'm pro-choice, I'm pro-gun. And a lot of those slogans were kind of divisive. But I think with going with pro-worker, it is... on point for today's problems, and that goes across both parties. So maybe some people that are on the edge or fence, can see that there is some common ground for people to come together, and there is something to work together on.
I agree. So I like I certainly feel like I am pro-worker, and I certainly know people like Ed Schultz are, and I think there are a lot of, you know, progressives in the government that are pro-worker. I guarantee the right will use pro-worker as, like, communist. And that's the that's why, by the way, when we use this phrase as workers' rights, and, mm-hmm. And when they hear workers' rights and union, they think communism. They mm-hmm. really do, and it sets them on fire. Glenn mm-hmm. Beck has basically used the concept of workers' rights as the centerpiece of why Barack Obama's a Marxist.
Okay. But at the same time, so what? They're negative about everything.
I agree. I think pro-worker is something we could definitely add to our thing. So thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to... Carol in Chippewa Falls, just because I've never been to Chippewa Falls, and it just sounds so lovely. Hi.
Hello. Hi. We're having a big snowstorm here today, but I just want to get back to give you a little bit of arsenal for when you're talking to those GOP people, and usually it's men who speak out of both sides of their mouth about reproductive rights.
Chicks need to know that they need to use condoms because guys don't like them. That's my my policy.
Yeah, I know. That's why I held on for so long. I just have to say, next time you're talking to them, ask them why they vote to defund Planned Parenthood and
right.
family planning clinics, who do the most for, you know, preventing
exactly. Well,
abortion.
I made that case in the last hour because, you know, they're like, you know, we're pro-life. And I'm like, nah, you're kind of pro using a woman as a broodmare. But
yeah.
once she actually has the kid, Where's your support for S-CHIP? Where's your support for school lunches and Head Start?
It all stops right after the kid is born. But I want to say from a personal experience, I'm an RN, and I worked in an abortion clinic in Wisconsin, and not many abortions are abortions of convenience.
Right.
But there are a lot of abortions that are done because birth control fails. Birth control pills are not 100%. People get the flu. They forget to take them. Something goes wrong, and just because they are not 100%. And then, so the person's trying not to have a kid. Don't blame them. It's not a convenience to go have a
kid. And they're doing that responsibly because they know they can't afford to feed the kid, clothe the kid, send him to school. And so they want to make a real decision. And then all of a sudden they're faced with the fact that I can't feed myself. I can't pay my rent. I can't afford a child. An average child, you have a child, it's going to cost you $250,000 from the day they're born to when they're 18 years old. That's the minimum. And if you have two kids, that's $500,000. If you have three kids, that's a, most people have can't get a 35-year mortgage on a $250,000 house. 18 years is going to cost you $500,000 if you have a kid, if you have two kids. So, like the idea that somehow these are abortions of convenience, and then you don't want to support the fact that it costs a lot of money to keep a kid healthy and safe, and you don't want to help. Not only do you not want to help, you want to harm. Thank you so much for the call, Carol. Lovely to talk to someone in Chippewa Falls. We just have a minute left, and I think it's time for the happy ending. Yes. Technology is helping us out all over the globe. And I'm not talking about the fact that the Iranians have a flying saucer now. I'm talking about on a bunch of fronts. Another solar plant has opened in Tibet. Tibet is now actually producing solar panels for their area of the world. They will have green energy faster than the rest of us. Desalinization plants have made a huge step forward. The BMW hybrid car is coming out. It's going to be way more efficient. We only have 30 seconds left, and I've got so much stuff to talk about. We got to go. I'm Hal Sparks. I'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for the conversation. So climb aboard.